Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
We've got some pretty big problems here. We need some pretty big solutions. You know, I think it was Einstein who said that insanity is doing the wrong thing over and over.
Our team traveled down to Port-au-Prince.
Do you think you represent Italian Americans in a positive light?
I think it's a shame that people are focusing on this.
More than a million cases of chlamydia were reported in the U.S. during 2006.
That's very tough to swallow.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Much thanks to David G. Hall. We'll be hearing more from him, I'm sure, on the question of whether or not Mother Teresa gets a stamp. If he and the other atheists have anything to say about it, no. The World Famous Phil Hendry Show, where every night we take you through the looking glass, the Alice in Wonderland of talk radio and media, through the news, through media, maybe through the things you believe yourself. Truth is our bitch on this show. Let me tell you what. And also, you can see our live streaming video, and you can listen to our live streaming audio at philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. That's where you can go for our archives. That's where you can go for our archived television programs and video and TV pilots that we've done that never made it to the air. So you'll be the first person to see it, maybe the last. And also, you can look at our five-day video archive. You can listen to our audio archive. It's a great place, great resource for Phil Hendry fans, a great place to go to figure a little bit more out about our radio show, because I got news for you. If you think you got the show figured out in 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, forget it, man. It isn't going to happen. All right. We're bringing on the show tonight a couple of guests that we actually had on last week, but we have decided to bring them back because there's been a little bit of a controversy erupting in the environs there of Western Estates, California. They are the president and the secretary, vice president of the Western Estates Homeowners Association, Bobby and Steve Dooley. Bobby, how are you tonight?
We're doing good, Phil. As well as can be expected, I guess.
And what happened and what has caused this this controversy? I know that there have been some pretty harsh words spoken, and there have been some people. I think was the L.A. County Sheriff up there?
You know, we don't want to comment on that. The attorney for our homeowners association has asked us not to comment on that.
All right. Well, tell me, in essence, what's happened.
Well, I don't know whether my husband Steve is here. But my husband and I decided to paint our home. This was two weekends ago. We decided to paint our home the color blood red. The reason for that is my husband felt, because we're very eclectic people.
You painted your home blood red.
That is correct.
And I'm trying to feature what that is, Bob. I know what it looks like. It's kind of a lighter and a brighter red, I guess, huh?
It's a very distinctive color. I think it's different from a burgundy. Obviously, it's different from... it's a blood red is the best way that I can put it. And we have a red tile Spanish roof. But my husband and I are both very eclectic. We're extremely artistic. We're very edgy people. We're very witted. We communicate with younger people much easier, I think, than most people our age. And we just felt that we wanted to make a statement about health care in the United States Congress. What could our statement be beyond just protesting weakly and feebly like so many people? We wanted to make a statement, and that was our statement. And my husband felt it would be an appropriate statement.
All right, but that wasn't the end of it. You painted your home blood red two weekends ago, which would put it, I don't know what the date would have been.
Well, it was around the 16th, I think.
Yeah, right, 16th or the 18th, I forget.
Around the 16th or the 18th.
All right. Then what happened?
Well, then we had a call from a guy named Jim Carlisle and his wife, Carolyn, and both of them asked us about the color. And we said we have made an executive decision to protest the health care bill. They pointed out to us that the CCNRs, which are our homeowners association rules, I'm very nervous.
You're doing fine.
Prohibited... that kind of stark color. There was a code of colors that you can use. And I said to him at that time, I thanked him for pointing that out. I had overlooked that. But my husband told me to tell him that because I'm the Homeowners Association president, we do make an executive decision to paint our home blood red. He asked why. I said to protest the health care bill. He seemed satisfied. The next morning, Carolyn calls his wife because he's at work. My husband noted that now the wife is calling because my husband felt it was because the husband, Jim, had lost his nerve. Now Carolyn's calling. And
well, or he might have been at work, but go ahead.
Well, all right. And she said, why can we paint our home a color we want? And I said, no, unfortunately, Carolyn, you can't. I am the Homeowners Association president, and this is an executive decision that I've made. She hung up. Later on that night, her husband called back and said he wanted to clarify that we painted our home blood red. I said, yes. He said, to protest some political point of view. I said, yes. He said, but you told my wife we can't paint our home any color we want. I said, no, unfortunately, I'm the Homeowners Association president. I've made an executive decision. That's when he said to me, well, that is effing bull F. And I really thought I was going to pass out. I told my husband I had to sit down. I have a very weak heart as it is, so I suffer from a palpitation. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, well, he said effing bull F.
So he swore. He swore at you.
I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I was stunned. Now, we don't allow the delivery of newspapers here to our gated community because we feel it's information overload. Jim went out and got a newspaper and was reading up on the health care bill, etc. But he came back and he said, well, unless, you know, you allow home delivery of newspapers and loosen some things up around here, that's when the sheriff was called.
Yeah, the sheriff.
So you had a visit from the L.A. County Sheriff. Why?
Because we do not allow the home delivery of newspapers. And Jim said that's the last straw, us painting our house blood red without allowing him. We just want to say, Phil, that it really takes a lot of gall for people to move into a gated community, to say they understand the CCNRs, and then give me attitude when I've made an executive decision. And then, after accepting the fact that I don't allow the delivery of newspapers here, make an issue out of that until we have to call the police.
And who called the police?
Well, we did. We called the police because we felt Jim was a threat.
And why did you say that? Why did you think he was a threat?
Well, I hope not, Mr. Nick, because he said my wife often pulled
that. Because he used that vulgarity with me.
So you felt that because the man got angry and used some vulgarity, some obscenity, not obscenity, but profanity with you, that was, or obscenity, I should say, that was enough to call the police?
Yes, Phil, in our mind. I don't know if you have a family. I don't know if you have a wife. But yes, my husband was protecting me from a lunatic who went that, you know, F word.
All right, I want to ask you a question here, Bobby. You're the Homeowners Association president at Western Estates, and I don't know what that goes with, but if you have rules and regulations, and I'm familiar with this because I've lived in these communities where you have a code that says you can only paint your house a certain color, and you can only do this and do that.
Well, I don't know how long ago you lived in one.
It's been a while.
All right. I don't know if that makes you conversant.
Well, am I wrong? Is that what you have?
Yes, we have that, but you... Please don't make it sound like you know all about it.
Yeah, you haven't lived in one a long time.
No, I'm not saying that I know all about it. I'm just saying that you do have a code in there that says you only can paint your houses a certain color, right?
That is correct, Phil, yes. But...
All right, but please allow me, if just indulge me. You went ahead and painted your house blood red to protest, which I certainly understand the symbolism, and yet you know that there is a CCNR against this kind of color, these arbitrary... paint jobs. So when the man called, you said, oh, yeah, that's right, but it doesn't apply to me.
That's correct, because I'm the Homeowners Association president.
But I made an executive decision. I said that my wife made an executive decision on that.
I made an executive decision. That's correct.
Okay, which means you get to paint your house any color you want, but the other people in the neighborhood don't.
It means the other people can apply to us as to what color they want.
Well, who do you apply to? Just you?
I'm the homeowners association. Phil, please don't make it sound like I'm just some dictator. I'm the homeowner.
Well, you also said that you have prohibited the delivery of newspapers to your community because it's information overload.
Exactly. And this man, Jim Carlisle, Steve said he went monkey and... He went chimp because he suddenly said there's all these rules that he doesn't like. And that's when he called up and said, it's effing this, and I called the police. Now, the reason why we don't allow newspapers is for that very reason. You get this information overload, you start reading up on protests, and you see where there are people causing problems, and you get ideas in your little head, and the next thing you know, you're Jim Carlisle.
Yeah, you turn into Jim Carlisle, and you want to paint a house blood red, that'll
help you. Exactly. You turn into Jim Carlisle, and you want to paint your house blood red. And that's something we get to do. But Jim knows what needs to be done. And I don't even know why you're asking. I'm not clear on your question.
Well, I think my question's been answered very... thank you. Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley with us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So they've got a problem out there. And that is that Bobby painted her house blood red to protest the defeat of the health care bill, but they don't allow anybody else to paint their houses any color because, well... They're the presidents of the Homeowners Association. They get to do what they want to do. All right, our number 877-876-PHIL. You can call up and let Bobby and I know what you think about the situation she finds herself in. 877-876-PHIL. We have her husband Steve on the line as well. And the other thing that I thought I heard her say, they don't allow the delivery of newspapers at their gated community as well because of information overload. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. For an 8-year-old child to learn how to fire a machine gun unless he's living in Somalia, in which case, you know, line them up, man. The shooting range's open in Massachusetts. Phil with Bobby and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association, where you painted your home blood red. I understand that. It's an extreme color to protest health care legislation. I wanted to ask you, before we get to some phone calls here, Bobby, what do people do in your community to show their support, say, for the defeat of health care? They're not allowed to paint their houses these colors. Only you do, because you've said you have that right as the Homeowners Association president.
What is your question?
My question is, what do people do if they happen to support the defeat of health care?
Well, if they support the defeat of health care, they had their protest. They voted for John McCain. You know, Phil...
Why do you dictate to people these things like no newspaper delivery?
Well, Phil... People crave it.
You told me, hold on for a minute, you told me that you limit the bandwidth that you allow people on the Internet to keep certain websites.
People crave, Phil, that kind of security. I have found people want order. Those that cause problems, they move. If someone causes a problem and they don't move, we tell them that I have executive power. They're generally going to call up and curse me or cuss me or use curse words. We can certainly record that, and we can make them famous on YouTube.
But I'm asking you to be reasonable. What gives you the right to paint your house blood red to protest the defeat of health care and not allow anybody else to do the same thing?
Decision, Mr. Henry. I'm the Homeowners Association president, Phil. It is an executive decision. It is enough for me. It's just a statement that Steve and I are making. Why does everybody have to monkey see, monkey do?
Everyone's following and copying us.
Why does everybody copy us? Why can't they just be happy with the way their homes are painted?
Why can't you be happy with the way your home is painted? Or does it have something to do with the fact that you're the Homeowners Association president and you could and limiting the delivery of newspapers, limiting bandwidth, so you control the flow of information into and out of this Homeowners Association? It seems to me like you and your husband are the only ones that have any real freedom there. Here is Josh. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby Dooley. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I was just calling. I think, ma'am, with all due respect to you, I think that you're just being too dictating. I mean, I don't care if you're the president of any type of organization. You don't have the right to tell people what they can and cannot do. And I don't care if you are the president of the Homeowners Association or what have you.
Well, they signed an agreement. They signed an agreement saying that they would abide by our CC&Rs, you know.
Well, you did too, as the president.
But because I'm the president, I have made an executive decision to paint our home blood red.
Yeah, but isn't the president of any organization supposed to set the example for everybody else instead of overpowering them, telling what they can and cannot do? I mean, who died and left you to
in
be God?
Theory.
I mean, it doesn't
well,
make
in
no
theory
difference.
It is, but we've got, well, in theory, but because of the new sort of burgeoning middle class, you've got a lot of people that are, that can afford to live here, but they're mostly, how do I say, a lot of them are blue collar. They don't really understand the finer thing. We were to allow them to paint their home any color, God help us. God have mercy on us, in fact.
What do you mean blue collar? You're saying what?
Well, a lot of them, you know, are truck drivers, this kind of thing, which I have nothing against. But I have to limit what they read and what they hear. I don't need them getting upset. We certainly don't need them coming around to my house and gibbering on about something. So I tell them, look, I'm going to paint my house blood red, and they'll say why, and I'll say because of this. You don't get to. The only one that made a big deal was Jim Carlisle.
The only one, huh? I tell you, if I'd lived there, that would make two of us. It would be me and Jim.
Well, then you could call up and call me an... Well, there would be three of you calling me an effing you-know-what.
I wouldn't use vulgarity.
I ain't calling you a nasty word like that. I just think you're being one-sided and hypocritical, and it's ridiculous.
He called me an effing whore.
Oh, well, that's uncalled for.
Yeah.
Most definitely, that's uncalled for, but that still doesn't give you the right to dominate anybody, no matter if you are the president of any type of organization. I mean, you're just being overbearing and stuff. You just want to control everybody in that whole organization,
Josh,
that whole gated community, and it's not right. I mean, there's rules and regulations.
Do you think there should be, let me ask you, do you think there should be home delivery of newspapers? I mean, that's ridiculous.
I have no problem with home delivery of newspapers. If that's what a person wants, if they want to read up on current affairs in the newspaper, more power to them.
What's wrong with that?
What are you guys talking about? Why? It is unnecessary to get people riled up.
And what is with this limiting the bandwidth?
I don't need those people going to different websites and getting riled up and stirred up.
Do you watch the news?
Like a bunch of animals. But you
do
agree with
news?
Me. Oh, yeah, of course we do, yes.
Oh,
okay,
you do?
So you watch the news and you hear all this stuff that's going on in the world. Doesn't that clutter your mind, so to say, just like the newspaper? So how can you, if you're doing something, how can you expect somebody else in that organization not to when you're doing the same thing and you're supposed to be the leader of that organization?
I can handle it.
What makes you think that you can handle the things other than what handle more things than anybody else? You're human just like I am or anybody else is. Doesn't mean super powerful God or anything like that. Who can't handle
saying in comparison to the people that live here, in comparison to the other people that live here, you know, to use the word, yes, I am godlike. I don't think I'm God, but I'm godlike.
Hold on for a minute. You're godlike.
I can watch Fox News and not get propagandized by it. Other people watch it and they want to join the Tea Party. That's the difference. I can watch Bill O'Reilly and laugh. Other people watch Glenn Beck and say, oh, I want to do what he just said. You see what I mean? And so that's why we limit the bandwidth.
No, I think what I see here and what I hear here is that you are, you like to control everybody, and you think that you're above everybody else.
You don't like that a woman's in charge, is that it? Or you don't like that a woman's in charge? Does that bother
you? I have no problem with women in charge.
I'm a female. You do have a problem with that, don't you?
No, he just said that he doesn't.
No, I do not.
No, he doesn't. He said that he doesn't.
Which means that he does.
No, it doesn't mean that if he said no, it doesn't.
With all due respect, man, don't be twisting my words and saying that I said something, because you're not going to overpower me, man, for the plain simple fact. I have a mind of my own. I don't need you to control my mind.
Well, that's what people who live here say. But I've found that it's code, isn't it, for you're a whore?
Phil Hendry.
Ow.
You like it.
Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association. The number is 877-876-PHIL. And, you know, I'm sorry, I don't want to get off this, Bobby. You made the statement that you're not God, but you're godlike.
Well, Phil, that way you're taking it out of context.
She said she was godlike when it came to making decisions there. Now, you know, you can call yourself anything you want, but the fact is, you painted your home blood red to protest the defeat of the health care bill. You won't let anybody else in the neighborhood paint their house any color because that goes against the rules. But you go against the rules saying, as the president, you're allowed to do that. Why did you say you think you're godlike?
I never really said that I was godlike.
Yes, you did, and I can play the tape back.
What I said was that many people look up to me as if I'm God. And no, I don't think I'm God. But
why? Why do you say that?
Phil, it can be something as simple as this. You can look at the way that I dress. You can look at the way the other women in the community dress, okay? I walk outside in the morning. I'm sorry, I'm put together. You see a lot of women going out there. If you want to know why that we have banned the delivery of newspapers to our community, one of the reasons is that a lot of women will go out there and get the paper in their sweatpants with the...
the rear end all back down.
With the rear end bag down on them. You know, what's the line that you like, Steve, from that movie?
Almost no ass at all, and that bothers me.
I love it. Steve loves that movie. It's called...
Carnal Knowledge.
Almost no ass at all, and that bothered me. You know that one, Phil?
I know the movie, yeah. What are you talking? You're telling me that the women, they're coming out to get their newspapers in their sweatpants, and they got no ass because the sweatpants are bagging down?
Because of the lack of presentation. Our home was painted blood red in solidarity with all who supported health care. Now, we have a home that can be seen from the gate. It is blood red, and it will remain that way for 30 days.
And anybody that was in favor of the defeat of health care can't paint their house any color.
You're really making a big deal out of nothing.
You had the cops over there because some guy called you an effing something and said it was effing bull s and all this other stuff, and you said that you were quite frightened, so it really is a big deal, all right?
Well, but I don't think I'm J.C. on the cross.
Yeah, it's
more baseball or J.C. Steve calls me J.C. now as a joke because everyone thinks that I'm J.C. right off the cross. And I don't think I am.
Ms. Dooley, you may not think that you are. You may not say that you think you are. But a lot of the stuff you're saying, I can see how your neighbors think otherwise. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Kenny in San Antonio. Kenny, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead, Kenny.
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
Fine, sir.
Okay, I got a question. Ma'am, how did you become the Homeowners Association president?
Mm-hmm.
Are you elected?
Yes, I am.
I don't figure you're going to keep your position long. And secondly, how are the rules made? Are the rules, are they not... Is it a... Are you going to let me speak, or are you going to keep trying to interrupt me every time I try to talk?
Okay, I'm not interrupting you. I'm listening to you. I'm listening to you.
Okay. How are the rules decided?
Don't you have your thoughts? You know what it is that you want to say, right?
I want to know if you can answer the question.
Right.
How are the rules decided to live in your association?
What? How are the rules decided to live in our association? Well, you buy a home here, and you automatically become a member of the homeowners
association. The rules that are in place, how were they decided?
Oh, those were drawn up by our homeowners association when the community was open. That was in 1996. And, of course, they've been amended, and they can be amended by a two-thirds majority of our homeowner council. But I do have veto power.
All right, you have veto power.
Okay.
Can they override your...
Is
she elected?
Can they override? I want to ask a question here, though, Kenny. Can they override your veto?
Technically they can, but no one's really tried.
How many people live in your association?
What do you mean no one's going to try that?
No one's going to try and override a veto that... I don't understand your question.
You have veto power, but no one's going to try and override it.
I don't think anyone's got... I mean, no one's...
Nobody's got enough sense to override her there.
Well, no one would really dare go up against what I've been able to build here and what I've done. They know. You know, you're making it sound like I'm a dictator or something.
You are, ma'am. Well, I'm sorry. Staying plain and simple. There's no two ways about it. I live in a free America, and trust me, you are a dictator.
Well, no, I'm not. A dictator was Adolf Hitler, and I don't do that. I simply say to people...
You just made rules for everybody else that you don't have to follow. Even though it is an executive decision, as you say, you still made rules that everybody else has to follow except you. You get to listen to all the information overload that you want, but you won't allow anybody else to. That is the basis for a dictatorship, ma'am.
Kenny, just because you watch an episode of the Sean Beck Show doesn't mean you know what a dictator am or what it is.
Who's Sean Beck?
I think you were referring to Bill Beck.
You watch Bill Beck, right? And you think you know what a dictator are?
What a dictator are?
I learned what a dictatorship was way back when I was in second or third grade. Yeah, Bill Beck.
Well, I know that you watch the Bill Beck Show, though, don't you?
That's got nothing to do with it. We all know what a dictator is. You just mentioned Adolf Hitler. That guy was around before Bill Beck or whoever it is you're talking about. So we know what a dictator is.
Do I put people in ovens and turn them into soap? No. Do I slave labor from Poland? No.
Oh, come on. You know what I'm saying. You won't let them... they can't deliver newspapers. They can't... All right. The bandwidth.
She won't let them on the Internet to get the information because she's scared of the information.
Mm-hmm.
Because once people have information, they become dangerous.
Certain kinds of information. You cannot allow people to have... Kenny, if you lived in our community, you know I couldn't have... allow you to have certain information. It would be dangerous in your hands.
I am very dangerous because I am educated. Yes.
But I will say...
That is a problem
educated.
For you.
Well, then why would you... If you're educated, why do you have to have more bandwidth? But I've allowed two Jews to own homes here, so don't call me, a Nazi.
You've allowed two Jews to live there. Well, that's fantastic.
Would Hitler...
Okay.
Hitler has nothing to do with this conversation, ma'am.
You called me Hitler.
No, we didn't call you Hitler.
You did that, not me.
Mm-hmm.
I think you were a dictator. And that is exactly what you're doing because you're limiting
information.
You're controlling people's lives. You're getting the result that you want regardless of the means. Am I wrong here? Regardless of the means, you're getting the You
are wrong. Yes, you are wrong. We allow freedom of speech. Of course we do. This is America. I'm just saying that I had an impulse to paint my home blood red. Big deal. What color are you going to paint your home if you support if you support the defeat of health care? There's no real color.
Well,
so, and I thought blood red would represent what, you know, what the Republicans have done. World Jewry has nothing to do with this. And
world what?
Jewry.
Yeah, the we don't call her a Jewess, the lady that lives down the street.
You know something? I want to get off the Hitler thing, okay? And the Jewess and the Jewry and all that stuff.
See, listen to him laughing like
you
remember
know,
the
like
SS.
Where it is.
Listen to you
really
laughing like you're watching them going into the oven.
God almighty, you're crazy. You are out of your mind, you know that?
This man was laughing like he was a member of the Hitler Youth.
I may not want to live there, but I'd really like to come up there on the weekend and sit around a campfire and smoke a big old fat one with them and sing Kumbaya like they must do every weekend. Because
sit
they
around
definitely
a
got
campfire.
Be doing drugs.
Do I look like I go to the campgrounds
I appreciate your call, Kenny. One of the things that I don't like, Bobby, was the whole Jewish thing.
That was Steve.
I was only kidding.
No, you weren't kidding. And all this stuff about Hitler. Nobody's saying that you're Hitler. What I'm saying is, just as that other gentleman was trying to point out, you are controlling information when you don't allow a certain width of, you know, bandwidth, and you are controlling information if you don't allow newspapers to be delivered.
I told you we allow two Jews to live here.
Well, all right. Is that the quota?
What's the quota this month, Steve? I think it's...
877... Thank you very much. 877...
You hung up on her.
But don't you think I know, Bud, when I hang up on people? 877-876-PHIL... What?
You're up on line three.
Ms. Dooley, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
You know, you let the record show that you hung up on me. Let the record also show that you'll be enjoying yourself rolling around on the Legion skillet.
Oh, okay, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
What does that mean? Oh, okay. You don't get it?
No, I don't.
Phil Hendry.
On the line with me now from the Aberdeen High School Gymnasium, where they have a communication center set up, is Glenn Markham. Glenn with Markham Far and Wide Travel in Fort Lauderdale. And Glenn, how are you this evening?
I'm very good. I'm a lot better than when I spoke to you earlier in the week, Phil.
We did speak with Glenn earlier this week when the story broke about some kind of what they thought primate in Baker County there. And in the town is actually McClenny and Glen St. Mary, I think, two towns affected by some sighting of a primate. At the time we talked about this story, this wild monkey or bands of wild monkeys that you thought were out there, you were very concerned that the image of Florida might be tainted among people who potentially would travel to Florida on vacation, that people are panicking over seeing things. Is that correct, sir?
Well, I think that's a fair statement. I have since been in touch, and the reason why we, if I could give you a little background, Phil.
Go ahead.
The reason why we have set up this communication center here at Aberdeen High School, I want to thank Principal Jeffco and his staff for allowing us to use the gymnasium for our communication center, is we are in touch with travel agencies up and down the state of Florida, and we are also in turn communicating with travel agencies throughout the East Coast, as well as the Midwest and in other southern states, to give them as much information as we've got, and to get as much information as we can get out of the local Baker County Sheriff's Department, as well as the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. I spoke with Officer Ken Holmes. He told me that he doesn't feel it's an orangutan or any kind of monkey.
Now, the other night, sir, you said you thought there was a band of them.
The reports that we had gotten, and that's why we've decided to set up this communication center. We've got information coming in county from all over the county as to whether there is more than one ape, or is it an ape? Is it a monkey? Is it a baboon? To most people, it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference to me whether it's an orangutan or a baboon, so long as we know what it is. And if it is a primate, if it's a member of the ape family, and there is more than one or two or three, if there's a band of them, and we get reports like we had the other night that they were trying to pry open bedroom windows, or they were trying to get into through kitchen doors, and this of course is going to shock you. And
well, at the time when you were telling me about a band of apes trying to pry open bedroom windows, it sounded a little bizarre to me, as I'm sure it did to my audience. I mean, are you still holding to that information?
Well, that's why we set up this communication center. We're told now by Officer Holmes that he said it was a big orange ball of fur, and of course I said to him at that time, that doesn't really give me a lot of information. We were getting a lot of reports from all over the county in Greenbury. We got a report of a ball of fur or something orange. Over in Tennyson, we had an account of something hairy and orange that was running around, so we didn't know what this was. And then when Ken says to me, well, it's a big orange ball of fur, I said, well, you're going to have to give me something else. I can't live on that. And he finally identified it. He thinks it's a fox squirrel, and I've never heard of that. But at this hour...
Are you feeling better about it?
I would say at this hour we are feeling better. We're feeling more confident as the information is coming in, but it's coming in very slowly.
Well, what if you don't mind me asking, what's the big deal? I mean, if you can, is it one squirrel?
Well, this is what we're trying to determine. If it's more than one, if it is a band of these, if it is a herd of these, if it's a herd of squirrel that is, for whatever reason, using its numbers to get into the town and to do whatever a squirrel's going to do when it gets into town. I don't know what squirrels do when they pull into town, or it's probably the wrong term to use, but when a squirrel hits town, or I guess wanders, strays into town is probably the best word I could use. It's a rodent, and
But the other night, you didn't know whether these things actually existed or not.
That was our concern at that time, because we felt, and that's why we set the communication center up, we want to assure all the travel agencies up north that they can tell anyone who is traveling to Florida that the people in Baker County are not, not hallucinating. They're not, as we thought, a little retarded or mentally have a mental problem. There does seem to be something out there. And
yeah, because you thought that people were seeing things, that stories would leak out, that people were seeing monkeys running, as you put it, through the moonlight.
Well, yeah, the silhouette, I think what I said was the silhouette of apes running through the moonlight. But now I'm told, and I got a report here, what?
Got a nerve on them, see.
All right, that's Bob Webley. Bob, if you could come in now, and Bob will give you the report that he's got, Phil. This is Bob Webley. This is Phil Hendry. He's on the radio.
Mr. Henry, how are you?
I'm good, sir. You're up a little close on the phone.
Yes, sir. We have, right now, the report of a fox squirrel, not an orangutan. And that's been the report since 4:43 with the Fish and Wildlife phone back here. That's Fish and Wildlife. So if you need more information, talk to Kim. Wildlife people, all right?
Yes, sir. Sir, it's a little difficult to hear you. I know that it's probably busy.
Well, I'm sorry. Give it back over to Ken. This is Glenn Markham. Glenn Markham.
So I hope that helped you out, Phil. Did you get that?
Well, it was hard to hear, but he said that it was a ball of fur. It's not an orangutan.
That is our understanding. It's not an orangutan. So we're very relieved, and certainly we don't want the people of Florida to be seen as hallucinating anything or batty or something like that. And again, Bob Webley with more information, if I could have him.
I understand, but I'm having a hard time understanding him.
Mr. Hendry says he's having a hard time.
Well, I just wanted to tell you, Ken Holmes has told us. Hold on for just a minute, Phil. Roger, Fox, and Al. All right, I got the word now.
I'm sorry, Phil. He started to do something that we asked him not to do. And
what was that?
Well, he started to make radio sounds. We don't have a radio here. And Bob,
can I say something?
Go ahead.
I do that because I want people to know that we do have radio and we do have active radio communication, but I am not near the radio now. So I pretend as if there's a radio. I'll say this. Roger, flip the tape start. And I don't know why that's wrong.
Well, I think if I could say, Phil, I don't mean to have, air our dirty laundry here.
Well, if you gentlemen are having a conversation about something a little bizarre here, I just wanted to know about this.
Well, let me just say, Bob Webley is he's my right-hand man, and I have worked with him closely over 6-7 years in the travel business. He said to me that he wanted to assure everyone that we did have two-way communication with the Florida Fish and Wildlife people, and then what they did identify what this furball was, or this orange thing that was going up trees, that they'd be with us. Now, because we don't have access to that radio equipment that's in was set up in the locker room here at the gym, he said that he would make radio noises, make it sound like we have a radio. And I said, that's fine, you can do that, but I don't think it's going to be honest. And he said he'd go ahead and do it.
When you say make radio noises...
Well, he's saying all that nonsense.
Lower Todd, what? Well, it's 51.5. That's what I meant, so...
Don't yell into the phone. If you could get on an extension, Bob Webley will get on an extension.
All right, I don't think it's necessary for him to make radio noises like he's got a real
Visit
radio.
Visit us online at talkradionetwork.com. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
We weren't on any mission particularly. We were just looking to pass on.
I've got other things to do, to be quite frank with you, for my constituency.
Okay, so who's fighting there?
He called, himself called, as posting a ring.
Bring out the home.
Hey, welcome to world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And on this program, folks, we take you through a little bit of a looking glass, a little bit of a Alice in Wonderland-type view of the news and of events and of issues. And tonight we're going to talk in our final hour here about American Idol. We don't do a whole lot of discussion of this kind of specific cultural event, unless it has something to do with family, and of course, what is television but an event, a television? It's a utility that we often will use with our family. So we'll have Marilyn Donnelly joining us in just a moment to talk with us about American Idol. She's an advisor, a school advisor, works as a teaching advisor and assistant, and she also represents the Education Alliance for taking American Idol off the air, the Education Alliance for Responsible Television Programming, I think is what it's called. So we'll talk with her in just a second. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And coming up later on in the program, a top UN climate official is resigning, and the National Enquirer is officially in the running for the Pulitzer. Before we talk with Marilyn, we're going to listen to the American Idol most recent round of judging. Most recent round of, I suppose it's, seeing who makes the cut and who doesn't. Here is Angela Martin, and she is a contestant. She finds out if she's made it to the top 24 from Judge Cara DeJardi, I think is her name.
You are so special and improve so much, don't we, guys?
Yes.
Right? We really do. You have shown such incredible growth this year. I can tell you worked so hard at everything. It has been so difficult to pick 12 girls. Look at me. I'm sorry. You didn't make it. Listen, you are a great singer. You know what? There are other ways to do it, and you've got it in you. Like, guys, we want to encourage you to keep going.
You got to keep going. You got to keep going.
You are a star, no matter what, let me tell you. Oh. You're one of the bravest people I've ever met. One of the bravest. And I'm going to remember you.
Marilyn Donnelly now with us from the Education Alliance for Responsible Television. Now, you heard that. That was Angela Martin finding out if she's going to make it to the top 24. And you take exception to that, as do other members of your organization, right?
We absolutely do, Phil. And the sadism that you just heard demonstrated in that moment from that television show is exactly exemplary of why our children are in danger watching a program like that. And the young people that are auditioning on that program also equally in danger. That was a sadistic demonstration of the pull of that television program by that judge, who I don't blame personally. I find that those individuals are under obvious direction from the producers, one of whom, though, is Simon Cowell.
Now, Simon Cowell is a producer on that show, and you are saying that the producers of American Idol are intentionally sadistic.
I think the marching orders of the day, I think they enjoy telling these young people that they didn't make the cut. They couch it in a very maternal kind of feel. The language is familial. It is the language that a mother might use with a child. And you heard that one sound. I thought that was the singular, most irresponsible, most insulting, and most abusive audio that I've ever heard in my life from that program.
All right, we'll play it one more time so people can hear what it is you're talking about.
You are so special and improve so much.
Now, you can listen to this woman, and you hear the other judge, who is the man.
I can tell you worked so hard.
And they're building her up, and this is where they really get their thrills. Building them up.
12 girls.
Telling her how great she is.
Look at me.
Now, this is where she wants her to look at her so she can really get...
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
She's enjoying that.
You are
all right. She just told the girl, I'm sorry.
Yes, she just told that young, very vulnerable and very impressionable child, I'm sorry you didn't make the cut. Phil, what is significant in that piece of audio is just before she tells this child that she didn't make the cut, she says, look at me. Look at me.
Now, what do you think that... Are you saying she wants that girl to look at her so she can get additional enjoyment?
So she can have the enjoyment of looking at that child's face as she says, you didn't make it, and watch the crestfallen look on that child's face, look at the body language slump, look at the tears begin to flow. And, Mr. Hendry, this is the most insidious of all facts about that program. They do it for no other reason than their personal enjoyment and their sadistic gratification.
No, Marilyn, you said, though, that the producers want them to do this. Is this not something that they do for ratings?
Well, there is no real empirical data on whether this helps them with their ratings or not. To tell them that they don't make the program may or may not get them ratings, but they enjoy so much telling a young person that they're not going to be on American Idol, that their dreams will not be fulfilled, that they're not as good as the other young people, and that's very significant. To be able to look at a child, when you're an individual like this Kara woman, or this Jackson, or this Simon Cowell, and you relish the sadistic delight of telling a 14, 15, or younger, or even older, 20-something person that they're not good enough, when you relish and you luxuriate in the sadism of that, it is almost as if you are sampling wines from the Cote de Rhone Valley or Mendocino.
Oh, that, Marilyn, what you're saying, you know...
Or any of the newer Zinfandels, the white Zins from Oregon, yes. It's like wine tasting.
All right, what you're saying is there's no reason for American Idol to drag out telling these children, these young people, I say children, I mean these are adults, that they've made it onto American Idol other than the sadistic delight of this woman, Cara DeGiardi, or the other judges on this program. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And that's why we are, and Phil, we are being very clear about this. we are asking, and we're asking now, there's been an awful lot of discussion on the internet about demands of the government, demands that the government do this or that or else. Well, we are demanding that American Idol be taken off the air. We can no longer stomach looking at sadists like this Jackson, this DeJardy, this Cowell, delighting in the disappointment, the almost suicidal disappointment of a young person. And let me tell you something else. We already know that one young contestant killed herself in front of Paula Abdul's home.
All right, we know that, yes.
Today we saw an example of a mind that had eventually and with finality come apart. And the individual in possession of that mind, or who had possession of that mind, before he got into that airplane, was a man who eventually flew an airplane into a building, killing himself, one other person, and injuring others. We witnessed that today, Phil.
Right.
If American Idol continues to toy with the feelings of young people, ghoulishly and sadistically getting some kind of a perverse thrill out of telling a young person, you didn't make it. All these other people did, but you didn't. If they continue, you're going to see a lot more burning buildings on television.
That's very dramatic.
I have no doubt. I'm an educator, and I've been an educator now for 20 years. You're going to see a lot more burning buildings on television. And then I'd like to see the look on this woman, Cara DeJordy's face. Then I'd like to see the look on the African-American gentleman's face. Then I'd like to see the look, the smug look on Simon Cowell's face after he sadistically got his thrills telling a young contestant, no, you don't get to have your dreams fulfilled. You must go home now knowing that we don't like you. I'd like to see the look on his face when that child, instead of going home, goes to that pilot school in Arizona and learns how to take a plane off but not land it. And I'm sorry.
That's really very extreme, and I'd like you to, you know.
No, I'm very sorry, Mr. Henry. I don't want to have to talk about this.
But when we come back, I want you to back this stuff up, because, look, we're all concerned with the well-being of our children. You're saying something here that is brutally frank.
Mr. Henry, I do not delight in putting it this way. We have got to get this program off the air.
Is there any way that they could put it so that they wouldn't be so sadistic?
You cannot change the spots on a leopard. I've seen this Cara DeJardy. I've seen her up close. I've seen her in person. She has the look of a jungle predator. She has the look of a sadist. And I know that look. And the same with the African-American.
Mr. Jackson, what is his name? Jackson, right. And Cowell?
And Cowell, yes.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Talking here with Marilyn Donnelly. Ms. Donnelly is with educators for the Education Alliance for Responsible Television. And the question we have here, should American Idol be taken off the air because the people who are rejected could turn violent? American Idol, according to our guest, rejects people with such a sadistic glee. In other words, they are so sadistic with their enjoyment of watching kids who are disappointed and who will not be on the program. Are they turning these kids violent and into the next Joe Stacks? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Thank you. I thought that went well.
Hold on.
Phil Henry.
On the line with me is Marilyn Donnelly. Ms. Donnelly is an advisor. She's a student advisor, school advisor, teacher advisor, and she also is a member of the Educational Alliance for Responsible Television. And Ms. Donnelly, you've made it very clear you think American Idol needs to be pulled off the air. You're talking about a level of sadism, meaning that people enjoy seeing the pain of others among the judges, DeGuardia, I think is her name.
And Randy Jackson.
Randy Jackson, Simon Cowell, you're saying that they enjoy watching these children suffer.
I absolutely do, Phil. And the other piece of audio that I think you should hear is of this young contestant by the name of Thaddeus Johnson. You are going to hear a level of sadism that I don't think you've ever heard on national television from an adult to a child. That's the most disturbing part. It is one thing to say that a child doesn't win a contest or an adult doesn't win a contest, but to sadistically, with cruelty and malice aforethought, revel in the pain and anguish of a child, I think it takes the program American Idol to a new depth of depravity, really, that I don't think I'd ever see a television program, or for that matter, any platform, lower itself to.
All right, here is Thaddeus Johnson, as he is told, and you'll hear him in a various stages of this competition that he doesn't make the show. Thaddeus Johnson, and his mother was there, too.
Thaddeus, you didn't make it. And I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything wrong this week.
Now watch as they drag it out. Watch as they drag it out.
Thank you. Just a lot of people. Hard time to decide.
Come on, chin up. Chin up.
They said I did great. Man, I did nothing wrong. But I don't understand how you can do great and do nothing wrong and still get let down. I just thought it was my time. Right. And the excellent during Hollywood Week, they told me that I was great. They
lied to him, in other words, Phil. You hearing that?
Yes, I am.
Listen to this poor child. And Simon Cowell, don't make any mistake. Simon Cowell thinks this is thoroughly entertaining and funny.
You think Simon Cowell is listening to this and laughing?
I have no doubt in my mind at all. He thinks it's so funny.
They said there was nothing wrong with me.
Randy Jackson, who should have some empathy, this is a brother.
Stop it. Stop.
Randy Jackson is probably howling with laughter.
I find that hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that they're howling with laughter.
Phil, I'm telling you, I've been around children for a long time, and I've seen the effects of sadistic adults on children. And this child, by the way, this boy was also very overweight, and this hardship can't be good for his heart. I don't think that American Idol and Mr. Cowell at all, to be honest with you, I don't think they would be overly disappointed if that child, on top of crying and feeling brutally disappointed, had a heart attack right in front of America and died. And
I know you know what it is you're talking about. I don't know the principles. I find that so hard to believe.
And died. And you may find it hard to believe, but I believe with every fiber of my being that if that child died of a heart attack after weeping that he did not make American Idol, Randy Jackson, the black judge, who should have some empathy, would be spitting up with laughter, howling, with the driver's door of his Rolls Royce open out onto Sunset Boulevard, and him spitting to try to clear his throat.
That's an indictment.
I know what it is.
That is an indictment that I think you're going to have a hard time backing up. Were you ever to be sued for saying those things? Amber in Mobile, Alabama, go ahead, Amber.
There's no way they can sue me.
I don't know. Amber, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Marilyn Donnelly.
I was actually calling to tell Miss Mary that it's okay for her to turn the channel. And it's okay for her to not have her kids watch it, or herself, or her husband. And it's okay for her to even tell others not to watch American Idol. But to demand that a show be pulled because it's satanical or sadistical, or let me use her words, luxurious. What did she say?
I don't know. I don't even know what the word sadistical is. You made up a word there.
And as did you with the whatever you put on the end of luxury. But the bottom line is the word called luxuriant.
No, I'm going to give you the word because it's called luxuriant, or to luxuriate in something is to enjoy it almost obscenely.
Well, thank you very much.
I believe that's what they were doing.
Okay. So, and I'm sure that that's your opinion, and I respect you for that. But what I wanted to offer you was...
Well, I don't think so. I think after you hang up, you're going to tell me to go to hell.
Ms. Donnelly, don't be.
If I was going to do that, I would tell you that on the phone. Now, anyway, what I was going to say is that we have created a society of individuals for the last couple of generations that have absolutely zero coping skills. It's like they started at T-ball where there's no winners or losers. They don't keep scores, so everybody's great. Well, that's not the truth. And if we can start rearing our children like it used to be in the old days, the survival of the fittest, and
when you work hard, you reap the rewards.
When you plant
this woman
the,
doesn't
plant
understand
the field,
that
hold
I'm
on.
An educator.
Hold on. I will
I'm
answer your question.
I
will answer your question.
Well, I'm not answering your question. I have nothing to learn from you. I'm the
you
educator.
Do not.
Will you let the
oh,
lady,
you think
please?
So?
Yes, I have. You know nothing of my life. I am
as,
the educator.
As you do
here.
Of nobody else's.
And
this,
I can tell
this.
You.
Let me offer you
these
this.
Children are going to fly planes into buildings. Do you understand what it is I'm warning against?
No, it's not the problem
you saw
that
what
the children are flying planes in the buildings. It's the problem that the parents didn't set the right expectations in the first place of these children.
Did you hear what you
That's
just said?
The
you
problem.
Said flying flames into you said
no,
flying
I said
flames
plane.
In the building. No, you
That's
said
right.
flying flames.
No,
flames.
I heard her say planes.
No, she wanted to say planes, but she said flying flames.
She said flying planes.
How can we expect our children to have confidence when
because
we
you rear
laugh
them in confidence,
them,
you celebrate their successes, and you correct where they fail. You show them how to do things better when they don't do it properly, but you don't say, oh, you did that great when they did it completely wrong. You don't.
Is your name Amber?
And you don't,
your name is
and
Amber,
you don't
right?
put them through in a contest when they weren't the best.
Well,
that's the whole point of
the
contest.
So you agree with adults being sadistic with children? Do you think they should be tough enough to take it? Do you? That's what you're saying?
No,
that
I don't
what,
agree
that's
with
exactly
being
what you're
sadistic
saying.
With children, but I do believe in adults being honest with children. And I think that's really what's
I agree with that.
In our society.
I agree. I totally agree with that.
With
the lack
with
of honesty
children.
With our children.
I hate to see you teaching a class.
Phil Hendry.
With handsome young 14-year-old boys in it.
Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Marilyn Donnelly. She is with the Education Alliance for Responsible Television, calling for the television program American Idol to be taken off of the air for what she calls the sadistic treatment, the intentionally sadistic treatment of the contestants on that show. Now, I have that first cut, Marilyn. You wanted to listen to it again?
I wanted to listen again, Phil, to the contestant, Angela Martin.
Yeah, that's the one.
All right, now listen very carefully. You'll hear this DeGuardi woman, who is the judge. You will hear her relishing that moment, sadistically relishing the moment, as if she is a judge at a some kind of a seafood festival, relishing the moment that she tells this child, Angela Martin, that she isn't good enough. The reason why Ms. DeGuardi wanted to take the lead on this, because the other judges can do it, but she insisted that she tell this child, because she knew this child suffers from a Bell's palsy. In other words, one part of her face has a paralysis. And
You're telling me that this DeGuardi woman...
Let me finish. Ms. DeGuardi wanted to tell this child who had Bell's palsy, guess what? You didn't make it. And then you can see the look in DeGuardi's eyes as her eyes dart back and forth, taking in, soaking in the humiliation, the hurt, the pain, the almost the violence that is swirling inside this child as she recognizes it was good DeGuardi all the time. She knew that moment was coming.
Angela Martin knew she was going to be told no.
I think so. I think that she knew that DeGuardi had that viciousness in her. And even though that poor child at times tried to go to her face with her hand to push the lip up or to do something, she knew that DeGuardi had it in for her, so let's listen to that.
All right, here is Angela Martin being told by Karen DeGuardi she doesn't make the cut.
You are so special and improved so much.
You hear the lies. You hear the lies right away.
You really do. You have shown such incredible growth this year.
You hear her lying?
I can tell you.
I don't know if she's lying.
Everything.
I can assure you.
It has been so difficult to pick.
Well, she's really enjoying this.
12 girls.
Budget. Here it is.
Look at me.
Here, look at me so she can look at the drooping face and the Bell's palsy.
I'm sorry. You didn't make it. Listen.
Now, do you see the sadism?
You know what? There are other ways to do it.
Listen to her. Now she's dragging it out. Lying to the child that there's other ways to do it.
Why don't you? Why isn't it possible, Ms. Donnelly? Why isn't it possible that she's telling the child, you know, you really are a star?
No, it's not. If you saw this kid's face.
And I'm going to remember you.
Listen to the lies. And the other part, of course, Phil, that we all... It's very difficult for us to understand at the Alliance. Knowing that later on, after the show was over, Mr. DeGuardi most likely asked to see the tape again and sat there in her stocking feet in one of those elevated director's chairs, eating some yogurt that was brought to her from Kraft Services and laughing yet again at that moment that she looked into that child's eyes and said, you don't get to. And the poor child, now unable to hold that paralyzed face in place, weeping.
Have you talked to any of the people from American Idol?
No, I won't talk to them, and I know they won't talk to me. No, we are judging this objectively from video of the show.
Because I think it would do a lot of good if you could, you know?
No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to give them the benefit of the trying to finesse us and entertain us. No way. Mm-mm.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. We have Rick in Chicago. Rick, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Marilyn Donnelly. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, thanks, Phil, for taking the call.
Yes.
Hey, I just want to say that I think that lady's accusations about American Idol and the judges is absolutely ridiculous. American Idol's a competition. In the competition, you got winners and you got those that don't. Like a sporting event, you know, you got people that make the team, you got them that don't. You're telling me people that don't make the team are going to jump on an airplane and run into a building?
No, I didn't say that. I said people that are sadistically treated when they don't make the team. People, young people, let's remember who we're talking about here. We're talking about children.
Children that don't make the team and are sadistically told
you don't get here. You know, it's stretched out. They make a big deal out of it. They tell them they're great. You heard that little boy being lied to by Cowell and his Confederate Jackson.
Lied to?
Saying,
well,
oh,
wait.
You're great.
The competition.
And then
the
told that little boy, no, you aren't great. You stink.
Wow.
And it's ridiculous.
I think it's amazing that you find it funny. I can't believe
it. It's a show. American Idol is entertainment. It is a show.
Yes, of course, it's entertainment. And we use children. Yes, you're absolutely right. And part of the entertainment is to humiliate children.
I'm sure I'm not the only one, obviously, because look at the viewer ratings on this show that disagree with you.
What difference does it make? All right, so I don't know that that's true at all. I think that people are sadistic in their need to see a child suffer. And you know that in America, there's no country in the world where we love to humiliate a child as much as we do in America.
Wait. Hold on. What is that supposed to mean?
This man has done nothing but laugh. And the reason why he laughs, he thinks it's funny, the idea of children being humiliated.
No, I take the idea that... I think the comments you're making is hilarious.
I'll tell you something. I can only hope that a child that has lost out on American Idol boards a Cessna and flies it into whatever it is you call a workplace.
Oh, man. Wow.
You know, my daughter...
Considering we just had that happen today.
No, well, I'm sorry. If he wants to laugh about it, then...
My daughter...
I hope your daughter's at home with you at the time.
Well...
My daughter's been
in
competitions, and she's not always won them. But I stood behind her, and I showed her just keep going and keep trying. Because you know what? That's what life's about, winning and losing.
All right. And
you don't always win,
man. Competition that I was judging, and I said to her,
you're building.
And I said to your daughter, I said, dear, you know, you're really great, but guess what? You haven't got it. Get out of here. You and your old man.
And since she's been told that. Maybe
she's never been told that,
but you know what? She kept going, and she's still going.
I would say to her, you haven't got enough voice to call the cattle home.
Ma'am, I'm glad you're my daughter's teacher. Thank you, Phil.
Well, you know what? You're happy, but you laugh at other children that are treated that way.
All right. Thank you very much, Rick. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to another phone call here. We got Janet in Pensacola. Janet, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I don't know if this woman is for real because she sounds so wacky. This is ridiculous. Since there's been show business.
I don't find children
since
being
there's
laughed
been
at,
show business, ma'am,
me,
there has been rejection. Rejection is part of show business. No one forces these young adults.
Sadism.
You let me speak, ma'am. No one forces these young adults to audition for American Idol. Actors, actresses, everyone in show business goes through rejection. They say there's a broken heart for every light on Broadway. It's part of show business.
Excuse me. It's part
of life.
Every light on
there's
Broadway.
Been an Arthur Godfrey talent contest. The competition is the American way.
Let's keep it in the 21st century.
And if you can't take the rejection, then don't audition. Don't go up for it.
Well, I don't think you know much about show business.
I surely do, ma'am.
I was in show business.
You know nothing about it. You're a wet job.
What do you know about show business? What, were you some old minister on the stage in Las Vegas?
I don't have to go into it.
Yes.
I'm just telling you that. And
true.
I'm sure Mr. Henry will agree with me that he's gone through rejections in his broadcasting career.
Well, Mr. Henry has gone through more rejections than just his
broadcasting. No, you don't have to say that. Everyone has.
But
what's the point of that to humiliate me, Ms. Donnelly?
I'm sure you've been rejected in more ways than just broadcasting. I'm sure with that face.
You know, Ms. Donnelly, I'm not attacking you personally. I'm not talking about you.
All right, well, then let's talk about the lady on the phone, Janet. She's trying to tell me she's been in entertainment.
No, I never said that.
Yes, you said you were in show business.
No, I never said that, ma'am. Okay, I studied theater. I studied acting at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York City. My father was an operatic tenor. I know a little bit about show business, ma'am. And I'm telling you, if you can't take the rejection and it's rough to take, get out.
Not everybody can take the rejection.
Well,
and if you can't take it, get out. No one forces these young adults to audition.
Your poor father
and no
wasted
one's doing
that money on your education.
What?
How do you feel about your father wasting all that money on your education?
How do you figure her father wasted it?
He wasn't wasted.
Did you work as an actor? Did you work professionally in the theater?
I couldn't take the rejection.
It's okay, please.
Mr. Henry, I don't care about Janet, me, you. I'm talking about children that go in front of Simon Cowell, overweight, fat, African-American children. Now, let's remember who we're talking about. Fat, black children who are then rejected. Mr. Cowell takes that tape home, gets comfortable into a bathing suit or some kind of a dressing robe, and laughs hysterically as he watches it over and over again. This is what Janet and you think is fine. I don't.
They're not doing it sadistically, ma'am. That's in your warped mind.
Janet, I know that you were, for just a moment there, you were remembering back on when they told you, get lost. Right?
Well, they don't even say it like that. They don't even say it like that.
They say next. How do they say it?
They say next, and then go on. They don't have time for that.
Did you ever bawl like a baby and say, oh, please?
Of course.
Like
it's horrible. It's horrible, but no one forced me to go to that audition. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's painful, but it's life.
Your father forced you. You wanted his approval.
No, my father didn't force me. That's what I wanted to do.
But you wanted his approval as an operatic tenor. You wanted to be him. You wanted to be like him, didn't you?
No.
Your father did that to you. Yes, he did.
What are we doing here?
Psychoanalyzing people. I'm talking about these kids on American Idol. and you're talking about a boy.
That fat little black boy is what Simon Cowell watches as he's sticking a spoon into a jar of peanut butter.
All right, Janet. Hey, Janet, thank you for a very interesting story about your coming up in the entertainment business. Here is Joe on the Phil Hendry Show. Joe, go ahead.
didn't come up
listen,
in the entertainment
listen,
business.
Listen, that American
she
Idol.
She had no which experience in the entertainment business.
I understand. Go ahead, Joe.
American Idol is completely about making money. It has nothing to do with proper behavior, good behavior. It's all about making money. It's a phenomenon. It just beat the Olympics the other day in ratings. It beat the Olympics. And so...
I understand that. And they're doing it by humiliating children and sadistically manhandling them.
That's your opinion. That's your opinion, and you may be right. You may be right.
Did
you
hear that child crying? Did you hear the child crying?
No, I did not hear the child crying.
All right, listen, please, Mr. Hendricks.
She didn't make it.
Well, I can't play the whole thing.
You're going to play the whole thing.
This week, genuinely.
Thank you.
Just a lot of people, hard time deciding.
Come on, chin up. Chin up.
That little boy was weeping as Simon Cowell was holding back a laugh.
That's the way it goes.
You can't say that.
That's the way it goes.
You can't say
it's a life lesson for this person. We're going to call
it
a lot in our lifetime.
Yeah.
We're going to call it a lot in our lifetime.
You know, we were talking about this, Marilyn, yesterday. Simon Cowell, I told you, is my hero. I mean, I love the fact that he tells these children straight up, or these young people straight up, you stink, this is not the business for you. If more kids had been told that down through the years, we wouldn't have a glut of entertainers and a lack of mathematicians, scientists.
Oh, don't give me that speech.
Exactly. He's right.
No,
if we can tell these kids honestly, you don't belong in this business. Go back home and do something that you are great at. We wouldn't have these heartbreak stories.
That's right.
Instead, now, what we're going to have are children climbing aboard Cessnas and finding a building to fly into, just like Joe Stack.
Right. No, that's
ridiculous.
Oh,
get a load of him. No, get a load of him laughing. No, I hear Fort Lauderdale laughing.
I'm not laughing. What makes your opinion better than Simon Cowell's or Phil Hendry's or mine? What makes your opinion better than ours?
Simon
who? More properly than us?
Are you denying that that isn't a sadistic demonstration, dragging it out and then telling the child, you didn't make it, and the child cries, and they show the crying, and the humiliation.
Listen,
I can hear you. You're going like this.
All right, we heard it once. Go ahead.
It's interpretation. You can conceive of it that way. A lot of people feel that it's ridiculous for horror on television, you know, blood and guts and horror movies, et cetera. And so it's up to the parent to say, turn the TV off, Tommy.
Exactly. And the other thing is, these are not children, Marilyn. These are adults.
Oh, barely adults.
I don't care if they're barely adults. At some point, you become an adult, and you are legally responsible for your affairs, and you are of a majority age, and you have to go out into the world, and you have to just take a big bite out of the world.
Well, let me tell you something, Phil. The world is a big do sandwich, and you're telling all of us to take a bite.
I'm not telling all of us to take a big do sandwich.
What?
That's what it is.
It's a big do sandwich?
Crap. Yeah, and we all got to take a bite.
Phil.
Good day to you.
Phil, you've got to get some
All right, thank you very much, Joe. And we'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. The world is a big do sandwich, and we all got to take a bite. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
I said a big crap sandwich. I
want to... No, you're not.
Okay, thank you.
Phil Hendry. So here's the story. Big generation gaps in work attitudes revealed. Now, a lot of people are going to read this article, and they're going to think the logical thing. Well, it's not logical. They're going to think the predictable thing. Boy, this younger generation, they sure are lazy. New survey research announced today suggests large generational gaps exist, particularly when it comes to work attitudes. Work attitudes. The findings reveal young people just entering the workforce, often called the Gen Me or the Millennials, or at one time they were called the Gen Ys, are more likely than their elders to value leisure time over work and to place a premium on rewards such as higher salaries and status. Now, results of the new research suggested vacation and other leisure time have increasingly become important over time, with Gen Me placing significantly greater emphasis on it relative to the other two generational groups. Twice as many people in Gen Me rated having a job with more than 2 weeks of vacation very important. Just 23% of boomers agree that work is just making a living, compared with 34% of Gen Me respondents. Three-quarters of boomers said they expected work to be a central part of their lives, compared with 63% of Gen Me respondents. Just making a living, boomers don't see it that way. But the Gen Me'ers do. And the Gen Me'ers see work as not that central a part of your life. So what is that saying? They say two things. The Gen Me people, the millennials, are taking what one would call their life's passions or their loves, and they're exercising them more outside the bounds of their work. Their work is something that they do to provide the means for the expression of the rest of their life. And their work is also something that they can do because we live in the day and age of the telecommute, because we live in the day and age of the long-distance commuter and the computer commuter and all of these other things, that they are able to make their own hours. They can condense them or expand them as they see fit, and the employer doesn't care as long as the job gets done. So the job is secondary to the life, whereas with my generation, the job and the life were the same thing. Now, I got to tell you, there's things that I really dig about how Gen Me people look at their jobs, and there's things that I kind of like about mine. I know how many families and how many marriages have been destroyed by my job is my life, because that's a really all-consuming thing. I mean, you will suddenly find yourself doing nothing but your work. It's your escape. It's your solace. It's your mistress. It's your wife, in the case of, you know, being a man. So that can really wreak havoc with a family. There's an old saying that for an artist, the family is death. Can you imagine that? For an artist, family is death. Which, well, that doesn't need any explanation. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. What a Gen Me person is saying, and maybe Gen Xers to a degree, is they're saying, I'm not going to wreck my life with my work. My work is going to be a means by which I can carry out the expression of the rest of my life. And my work, by the way, is something that I will do in such a way so as to leave as much of my life free to me as I can. Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because when your life is open to you and you have ways of you have more time to think and explore and create, I see it as a function of Gen Me'ers having been raised by boomers, looking at the way they get burned out on their jobs, looking at the way it destroys a family or it can destroy a marriage, and saying, that isn't going to be me, man. I am not going to work till 11 o'clock at night and not see my family and not have a life. So it's like, to me, I take it as an evolution. I sure as hell don't think it means people are getting lazier. That is not, there's one thing that we're not, we're not lazy. Dumb? Okay. But lazy?
Oh, so everything you said was bitching until then. You think we're dumb?
I think that we've been smarter as a country. Let me put it that way, okay? Don't take it so personal, bud.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Like, oh my God, I hope the teacher knew what she was doing.
Why is it so uneasy?
It's a miracle that everyone is okay today. We're grateful that they are.
Well, I mean, you know, you got to own up and just take responsibility.
One vision has been presented.
Bastard from a basket!
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show. Radio for Patriots, by Patriots, that knows what it's talking about. This is a radio show that goes anywhere, everywhere, and all those places other talk shows cannot. State of the art. You know, State of the Union, baby. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And we're also online at philhendryshow.com, where right now, if you have a backstage pass, but you must have a backstage pass, you can watch live streaming video of our show. It's what we call Phil TV in HD. And join all of us. These are all people heading over to their going over to their widescreens and watching Phil TV in HD. Booby, you check that out. And on Radio for Patriots by Patriots, we ask you also to join us as we lockstep and march over the tops of liberals and so-called progressives who want nothing more than to drive a spear right into the back of this great nation. Well, we won't let it happen. Our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Great to have you with us here tonight. Let's head on over to Ted's of Beverly Hills. Ted Bell at Ted's of Beverly Hills, and we're going to be talking with Ted this hour.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Thanks very much, Phil Henry. This is Ted from Ted's of Beverly Hills in beautiful Beverly Hills, California. We'd love to have you down for our slow-roasted, all-day cooked prime rib this Sunday. Join us for Easter. And, of course, Passover, too.
That's right, Passover.
Yeah, because the Jewish people, as you know, Phil, they have their last meal, and then they do whatever they do. And these holidays are very interesting because, I say this with great respect, I'm not the most religious guy in the world, you know.
Well, it's difficult to understand all the traditions.
But you say you're Catholic, right?
I was raised Catholic, but they're similar to the Jewish faith in that there is Lent, so we.
You don't want to say you're similar to the Jewish faith because it's not. I don't think it's respectful.
And what isn't respectful?
Well, you're Catholic. You're Catholic. You see, you're Catholic.
Yeah.
That's not anything. I don't know any Jew that wants to be compared to a Catholic.
And all right, Ted. You know what? We can get into these discussions of religion at a little later. You know, that was very insulting.
I'm kidding around, to that part of what I said that wasn't a joke. I think it does bear some discussion, but that's for another day. That's for another Phil Henry Show, Ted Bell segment. But I do very much appreciate you having me on the program here tonight, Phil, because the issue at hand that you wanted to talk about, children, babies getting alcohol in these restaurants, I think it needs to be explored because I think the public is overreacting and I think that the news media is.
Well, what we had wasn't one story. Now we have two stories. I think we've actually had three stories over the last week and a half of toddlers being served alcohol by mistake. Now, in the one instance here, Applebee's restaurant in Madison Heights, Michigan, and the parents of a Michigan toddler accidentally served alcohol at an Applebee's restaurant last week, they have filed suit. They have filed a lawsuit against the restaurant. And we're going to listen to some of the audio from that particular story. This is an interview with CBS News. Taylor Dill Reese talks about her 15-month-old son getting drunk at a local Applebee's.
He was a little out there. He was saying hi and bye to the walls, and he eventually laid his head down on the table, and we thought maybe he was just sleepy. Nobody at the table ordered alcoholic drinks. We can't. So he definitely shouldn't have received one.
So that's just one of the mothers involved there, Ted. There was one other story.
I forgive me for saying this. I have to doubt the veracity of that particular woman.
And why?
Well, I think it is a little. I don't buy her attempted humor there. And if you're talking about something that's very serious.
And what attempted humor are you talking about?
Well, she was trying to be funny. He was just saying hi to the walls. And
she's talking. The lady was talking about what, as far as I know. Okay.
Yeah, as far as you know, so you say, but you don't know.
Ted, I can assure you, I've heard that audio clip over and over, and
like you watched the video clip of the 6-year-old getting patted down with a hand down the diaper?
That wasn't me. That was Herb Sewell. I want to. Excuse me.
I'm sorry, but that's what I thought I heard.
Well, you heard wrong. You heard wrong. Now, that mother wasn't trying to do shtick. She's saying that this baby. Any mother that sees a 15-month-year-old child.
15-month-year-old? God almighty!
I meant 15-month-old.
You know, we're talking about alcohol, and I know that you're not drinking, but in order for us to have some credibility, this is a sponsored segment, I would hope that you would keep your mind on your business and not slop your way through this. And
I don't slop my way through my job at all. You understand that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, I don't like you intimating that I'm drinking on the job.
I'm sorry, Phil. I apologize.
We're talking about booze being served to children inadvertently. You're a restaurant owner. How does that happen?
I'll tell you how it happens, and I want people to understand that what we are dealing with is an age-old problem, Phil, and that is the problem of children in restaurants. Now, we have a very stressful situation working in a restaurant, especially a very busy restaurant, on a Saturday night, on a Friday night, a Sunday afternoon. Those are your three biggest days, and those are your three biggest parts of the day in the restaurant business. Sunday afternoon, Sunday for breakfast as well, most breakfast weekends, and, of course, your weekend dinners. And we had families in that have children that are loud. The children are a little out of control. They are running between tables. The parents don't do anything about it. And you have food servers who are becoming increasingly disoriented by that. They do not mean to serve the child alcohol. What happens is, because they are so stressed out and because they are so disoriented by these loud children, that when they go back to place the order, they inadvertently place an alcohol order. And their thinking is, if I can simply just quiet the child down.
And I don't understand what you mean by they inadvertently. Do they know that they're ordering alcohol, or don't they?
They know they're ordering alcohol. What they're not aware of is that they are going to give it to a child. But it is a subconscious act. Anybody in the restaurant business knows this. It's a subconscious act when you've been around a lot of loud kids. And I know that this is going to sound predictable, Phil, but I have to tell you, you know, I put it squarely on the plate of these parents. You know, I know that they want to blame us, the restaurant. I know they want to blame this or that. You know, these parents, they let these kids run wild. They let their kids scream and yell until the food server, the waitress or the waiter, can't take it any longer. They're on overload. They go back to the kitchen, and they have, or the bartender, I should say, and they have the bartender pour them what should be a child's drink.
Well, how do you make that mistake? See, here's my question. If I'm a food server...
The way you make the mistake is simply if the child ordered a Shirley Temple or a 7-Up or something like that, you're back at the bar, and you're filling that glass with some kind of a clear liquor and then some cherry syrup or something. You know,
no, you're making this sound like they don't know what they're doing, you know?
Well, they know what they're doing, but they don't mean any harm by it. They just want it to stop. Have you ever, you know, Phil, there's a lot of old books you read about people who are tortured, and they just want the torture to end. And they'll say anything. They'll do anything. They may not be in possession of any information that the torturer wants. Maybe we could bring waterboarding into this if you want, but they'll say anything and they'll do anything to just make it stop. And when we're talking about our waiters and our waitresses and our restaurants and very valuable people that they are, they'll say anything, they'll do anything. And when I mean do anything, I mean they'll do anything to make it stop.
And to make what stop?
The noisy kids.
I want to get back to this idea, and we're talking to Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. I want to get back to this idea that children are served alcoholic drinks by waiters and waitresses that don't mean any harm. They just want the kid to shut up. Now, this baby, this child that we were mentioning here in Michigan, and here's another story. A 2-year-old Lakeland, Florida boy was accidentally, quote-unquote, accidentally served sangria wine. And this baby nearly finished his drink in the green plastic Olive Garden cup when a waiter came over with a panicked look on his face. She'd ordered orange juice for her son, but the waiter told her the cup contained tropical sangria. The manager came over and apologized. No one offered to call an ambulance, so she and her mother rushed the boy to Lakeland Regional Medical Center, where she says he was treated for alcohol poisoning.
That was that mother's decision.
Yeah, but here is a guy, there's a waiter who said he didn't know what he did.
He was shocked.
Yes.
You are shocked. You are panicked. You don't want to do what you just did, but you have no choice. And that is, I've got to make the kids stop. I've got to somehow calm them down. And I've got to somehow make my life and the serving of food and my job and everything in between more enjoyable. And so what do? You almost subconsciously go to the bar and you order a drink that finds its way to the kid.
Has this ever happened to you?
Yes, it happened to me one time. I was helping out with a very large party, and I went, and this child that they had was screaming and yelling, and a couple of them were running between tables, and I grabbed a bottle of table wine. It was a jug of Red Mountain wine, and I poured it into a sip cup. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And I remember walking over and saying, literally taking the child by the head, or just the back of the kid's head, and pushing the sip cup into the kid's mouth. And they told me, and I don't even remember, but they told me, I said something along the lines of, drink it, damn you.
Drink it, damn you. And what did the parents say?
I don't recall having any interaction with the parents. The parents themselves might have been unconscious of what was going on. But just to the audience tonight, and certainly any servers know what I'm talking about, when you are serving and you have to deal with these kids, you're going to, every now and again, order up an alcohol. You're going to try to get alcohol into that kid. You don't want to do it. You don't want to hurt anybody. But it's either you or the kid. And, you know, this is something we've got to get parents to understand.
Well, I don't understand what it is you need them to understand. I'm going to give our number here, 877-876-7445. What do parents need to understand? Do they need to accept this as some kind of...
Yeah, they need to accept it as an occupational hazard. That their kid is loud, and their kid is rude, and their kid won't shut up, and that means that it's very, very likely a food server somewhere is going to try to get some alcohol into the kid. And, you know, these parents, I'm telling you, Phil, you want to talk about me and my servers, these parents come into this restaurant, my restaurant or other restaurants, and they don't care about anybody but themselves, their kid, their table, their food, and everyone else is an actor on the stage that is the grand drama of their little family. And so they wind up with the loud brat, excuse me for saying, and the rest of us have to pay in blood.
And oh, quit being so melodramatic, you know.
No. It's not melodrama. These parents let their kids run wild. They force us.
Force you to go to the bar and order up an alcoholic drink.
That's right. Our wait staff is at times so tired, they're almost in a trance from the stress of these kids' behavior.
Ted Bell joining us from Ted's of Beverly Hills on the mistaken serving of alcohol to children. This is the result, in his opinion, the result of the food server just wanting the kids to shut up and calm down, so they go over and they get booze to try to tranquilize them somehow. And it's the fault of the parents for letting the kids act the way they do. So if your child is served alcohol at a restaurant, if your as was the case here in this restaurant in Michigan, this Applebee's, or this Olive Garden in Lakeland, Florida, if your child is served alcohol, it's your fault you didn't calm the kid down. 877-876-7445. Your phone call is coming up next for our guest, Ted Bell. Is there any excuse? Is there any excuse for getting our kids drunk? Or is Ted just making excuses for himself and the restaurant industry? 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Table 3, all right?
Steakhouse, come on down.
Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. As we were mentioning, you know, it's going to be Easter time, Passover. Great time to celebrate feasting with the family during the holidays at Ted's of Beverly Hills. Come on down.
Here at Ted's, we want to put on...
Guess where? Oh, I missed...
Guess where, Ted? Beverly Hills.
Beverly Hills, yeah.
Ted Bell joining us here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're going to get to some phone calls here, Ted, but the question that I have for you is that if you're putting off the serving of alcohol that has happened, ladies and gentlemen, three times in the last 2 weeks, we've had three news stories from different parts of the country from the southeast, Florida, the Midwest, Michigan. I think we had another one in the far west. Alcohol just being served inadvertently.
Well, Phil, look, you know, this proves my point. This happens because what happens in these restaurants? The parents come in, and with them may be the apple of their eye, but it's not the apple of my eye. All it is a very loud kid. And so I try to make it comfortable.
What did you say, it? You mean the child?
Yeah, I'm sorry, the child. I try to make the child comfortable, make the family comfortable. All right, but at some point you have to recognize that you can't take it any longer, that the pressure, and when they come in, they'll say things, and my waitresses are put under an enormous amount of pressure. We do a very, very classy steakhouse. We don't have children's menus, but a lot of these families come in and they'll say, oh, excuse me, do you have a kid's menu? And that right there is like it takes years off your life.
And why?
What are you talking about, why? What do you mean, why? Because my servers have been trained to be, they're serving at a classy restaurant. It is not a macaroni grill. It's not the Cheesecake Factory. And
those are very nice restaurants.
Yeah, okay, Phil, you got your plug in. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
All right, no, I know what you're talking about, but I don't understand the whole thing about how it's stressful to have somebody ask you for a children's menu. That part I don't get. Robert in Rapid City, South Dakota, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell. Go ahead, please.
First of all, I'm a father of two sons, and I can't even believe what you're saying. You literally serve some kid wine to get them to shut up. How about I just shake my six-month-old son so he'll shut up? How about I just smack around my kid so they'll shut up?
Hold on for a minute. That'll kill him. But giving that child a little bit
giving
of alcohol...
Giving him alcohol poisoning will kill him. Are you
stupid? A little bit of alcohol
stupid?
Is not killing him. It did.
Giving him alcohol poisoning will kill him. Do you even hear the words
I'm not doing it on purpose. Well, let me ask
you this. Let's give our kids alcohol.
Why don't you
let him
keep
start
the kid
smoking
quiet, then?
Too.
No wonder the kid doesn't shut up. His old man doesn't. Why don't you keep that kid quiet, and then yourself, too?
Oh, hey, take it easy, Ted, will you?
Well, I'm trying to tell this guy something.
How about this? If you don't want to serve the parents or the kids, you have the right to refuse service to anybody as a restaurant owner.
We are trying, sir. We are trying to be accommodating. We're trying to be accommodating.
Well, you should be shut down. Shut down. That's what you should be, is shut down. You shouldn't even open your mouth on the show because
you
just sound more ignorant.
You don't have kids. You don't have kids. You're full of crap.
What do you mean he doesn't have kids?
I can tell. He doesn't have any kids. You're out in a parking lot lighting firecrackers tonight. You got bored, so you called me.
Wait a minute. Let's just be serious here for a second, okay? I'm going to say something. Hold on. If the man just made a very good point. He said, why not refuse service?
Well, they come into the restaurant, and they order their dinner, and then the kid, after he gets his pie or his apple pie, whatever the hell, then the kid starts acting up, and then the kid's loud. Then my waitresses begin to get stressed out. Then they ask me, do you have chicken tenders?
You, as a restaurant owner,
service in this economy.
Right to get rid of them if they are being that obnoxious. So serve them wine?
All right.
Serve them wine. That's your solution.
All right. Thank you. It's a good point, sir. I appreciate it. 877-876, Phil. We'll be back with more from Ted Bell. And the serving of alcohol to children was a mistake, but Bell says, well, you know what? The waiters get so stressed out, sometimes they don't know it, and they're trying to tranquilize the kid.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL.
Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on our website, philhendryshow.com. Right now there's live streaming video of our show, which is our Phil TV and HD webcast. And you can join us by getting a backstage pass and watching our high-definition video cast of the only radio show in the world that's worth watching, The Phil Hendry Show. With me is Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. Before we get to our phone calls, Ted, a couple of points here on serving alcohol to children. And you were mentioning that there's too much stress when the families come in and say, have you got a kid's menu? Do you serve chicken tenders?
Well, hold on. I want to go to this issue of alcohol because every mother listening to me right now, and maybe a lot of fathers know, that it has traditionally been, maybe if you want to call it an old wives' solution or remedy, for a child that is teething, huh? Yeah, when I say the word teething, all of a sudden a lot of mothers out there, they perked up because I just took a call from Marcy. She's listening to the show at home, and she said, you should tell Phil and his audience about this one particular incident. I don't want to get graphic, but we were having a lot of fun. It was right after Josh was born, and we were having a lot of fun. And Marcy took some vodka and put it on a certain part of her body. And after I was finished, she fed Josh. Okay?
And breastfed?
Yes. Right out.
And you had been... I don't think I needed to hear that story.
Well, I don't understand. What I'm trying to tell you...
Well, it sounds a little juvenile.
Juvenile? I'm a married man.
You didn't need to give me the whole background on that, man, okay? We can just talk about how alcohol will put a child out if they're teething, maybe, in your opinion. I didn't need to hear you and Marcy.
Boy, well, you're just like all the rest.
Man, too bad.
That may be too bad. 877-876-7445, The Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to Pasco, Washington. This is Melinda. Hi, Melinda. You're on The Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell.
Hi.
Hi.
First off, I'm not going to call in and yell at anybody, but I just want to simply start out by saying that I worked in the restaurant industry for several years as a waitress, and to say that the restaurant industry and the servers as a whole want to just shut kids up by providing them alcohol is not a correct statement. There may be a few people out there that make some pretty unlawful and stupid decisions to do that, but as a whole, that's not correct. In all my waitressing years...
You know that as a food server, I'm the owner of the restaurant. I'm Ted Bell. You know that as a food server, it's very stressful to have these families come in and say, oh, do you have a kid's menu? Do you have chicken tenders? Do you have this? Do you have that? When they should know, at least in my restaurant, we have a very adult restaurant, and if you bring your children, that's fine, but we're not bending over backwards for your kid. And that causes a great deal of strain with my servers, who find themselves wanting to medicate or tranquilize the child, yes.
Now, I did agree with your previous statement of stating that it is frustrating when a child is being allowed to run around the restaurant and throw food
exactly,
and all
yeah.
of that, and I understand that, but the answer to that is not to unlawfully provide an alcohol beverage to a child that's not even yours. I mean, first off, I think that if that happens, I think the person that does it should be charged with endangering a child.
You're talking about me now. You're talking about me, the owner of the restaurant. I poured red wine into a sip cup, and I took the back of the kid's head with my hand, and I shoved the sip cup into his head, into his mouth, and basically said, in the name of everything holy, drink, or something like that. They told me later.
What do you mean they told you later?
That's how stressed out we were. I said something like, in the name of God or in the name of everything holy, drink it.
In front of the parents?
Yes, in front of the people. Boy, oh boy. I even got a waitress. And I'm sure, Melinda, you're a good server. But
I think the liquor board should come in and take away the liquor license. I think that the person that gave the liquor or the alcohol to the child should be charged with child endangerment, contributing to a minor.
That would be me. So you want me to go to jail? That would be me. So you're asking that I go to jail and all of my waiters. And I would say to you, you have not yet indicted the most indictable group, which are the parents that like to sit back, relax, put their feet up on the table, and watch as the fun begins when their kid drives everyone half mad in the restaurant.
Well, I think, Melinda, you sound very, very sober and thoughtful, and I appreciate that. And you also sound like you know the law very well, which, of course, every food server should.
Well, I don't think he sounds aggressive enough, but you should be ready to defend me, the owner, the boss.
In this case, I would not, because of the fact that being a server can be stressful, but serving patrons regardless of, I mean, it's part of the job.
It's part of the job,
and it is the job and profession that one chooses to do.
Right.
If they are not able to handle it, then get out of it.
Well, you're just like all the rest.
What does that mean, you're just like all the rest?
If being rest means protecting the children, then I agree with that statement. I am like the rest when it comes to protecting the children.
No, you are right. Being like all the rest is basically saying to me, the owner of a restaurant, excuse me, do you have chicken tenders? Knowing full well that's like taking a spiked heel and jamming it up into blank, blank, blank.
But asking me if there's something on the menu that's not there would not make me want to.
Melinda, I
got to
go. I appreciate you very much, your call. 877-876-7445.
Well, that was rude. You hung up on that woman.
I'm trying to get through the calls.
Yep. When I'm making a good point, you hang up. And I'm telling you, Phil, and I'm telling your audience, when you have your child come into my restaurant and begin that cacophony, that loud, screaming, wailing, static, single note, I can't describe it. I know that every restaurant owner out there knows it. When you have that happening and you do it willingly, that is the same thing as waterboarding me. You know, and I don't want to be melodramatic.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I don't want to be melodramatic, but that's what it is. You might as well waterboard me. And so what will I do? What would any sane man do? I look for relief. What kind of relief? I try to tranquilize the animal, and then you realize it's a baby, you know. And so...
What do you mean tranquilize the animal?
What does a hunter do when he goes into the jungle and there's an animal in there that's going to kill him? He hit him with a tranquilizer dart. That's what I do. I see what it is. I try to tranquilize it. And then I realize, wait a minute, it's a human being.
But you still try to tranquilize it.
To the extent that it's... I'm not going to tie it to a pole and carry it back to camp.
877-876-7445 is a bizarre, bizarre set of comparisons you're making tonight, sir. Here is Nalani, I think, in Hawaii. Hello, Nalani. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi. First of all, I have to say I'm a mother of 18-month-old son. And
yes,
what
ma'am.
I'm hearing right now, it's making me very furious. I come from, you know, a very nice, laid-back place, but I just can't think right now. I mean, you say... that, you know, mothers give their children booze for cheating. If I want to do that to my son, that's my choice. But
yes, ma'am.
You should leave the decisions up to us. Don't go behind our backs and be giving our children booze in the restaurant. But that's not your decision to make.
Well, Nalani, I want to say, this is Ted Bell, first of all, and I want to say that you have a very beautiful name, and your name evokes the very relaxing and beautiful atmosphere that is Hawaii. And we have opened the Ted's of Beverly Hills, by the way, in Honolulu, which we're very excited about. But I wanted to get to the main point. You're right. It is your choice unless you're not doing anything about it. At which time then...
What do you mean, unless she's not doing anything about it?
Don't I have some say in it?
No, that's her child.
Well, I know it's her child, but what I'm trying to say is if Nalani's child has gone into what I call that static siren, that you know what I mean, Nalani?
Yes.
Nalani, okay, so you know when a baby will go, it's one note, and that's when I turn and very calmly walk back to the bar. You almost lose your own sense of self. I turn, I walk back to the bar, I lean over, and I tell him to hit me, you know, how about a water back? And then
what are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about...
I don't even know what that is.
I mean, that's why we have laws. If it was okay to give booze to infants and kids, I mean, so I could go around right now if you had kids, but could I give your kids booze and, you know, get
Well, I would say, if to answer you honestly, if my son was making a racket, and he was underage, and he didn't understand. He was making a big racket and was driving you to the point of taking your own life and maybe the life of your child, too, in a double suicide. I don't know what you want to call it.
What do you mean double suicide? You know, everything you're saying, Ted, there's not one thing you're saying that has any root in reality.
What are you talking about?
I mean, you're telling this lady, if my son, you're talking about your son Josh.
Yeah.
If he's driving her nuts to the point of a double suicide.
I'm saying I would give Nalani the choice to, yes, medicate my son with booze, if it was that bad.
And
when
that's
has
your
any
choice. But right. You can't go around making the choices for other parents. If you want to
when has your choice, restaurant when has a kid
fine.
In your restaurant, Ted, been so loud that you wanted to kill yourself?
Drink.
How about every other night? When the children come in, Nalani, and not everyone is a beautiful woman like you with a beautiful name coming from Hawaii, and I'm very relaxed. Probably the minute I see you, I'd relax. But not with some of these mothers. The minute I see them, I can feel a stroke coming on. I can feel weakness in my left arm. I can feel what I call, if you're familiar with the restaurant business, we call it the Kirk, K-I-R-K. Not Captain Kirk, but Kirk Douglas. And you can almost feel yourself start to do that.
Yes, but see, as a waiter, you have a job.
Yeah.
It's your job. And if you can't take the seat and stay out of the kitchen.
You're absolutely right, ma'am. But the job I have, I can't do if suddenly I feel myself kirking. You know? And
What is kirking? You could Kirk Douglas, the poor, the great actor, had the stroke?
Yes, if you're, and I say it with all due respect. I know Mr. Douglas. But all of a sudden, you're kirking. You can't say what you need to say. And I can tell you it's a frightening, frightening moment.
Well, I don't think that any child that you've ever had in your restaurant, I bet you I'm willing to say, has ever pushed you to the point of kirking. Nalani, thank you very much for your call.
Okay,
yes,
thank
dear?
You.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your call. 877-876-7445. As we talk about the serving of alcohol to children, we've had accidental alcohol service, accidental alcohol intake at about three restaurants over the last couple of weeks of children. And when I say children, I mean toddlers at an Olive Garden. Another was an Applebee's and so forth. Ted Bell, the owner of Ted's of Beverly Hills, says that this is sometimes something that waiters and waitresses feel they must do because the kids driving them nuts with their noise and the parents drive them nuts with inane questions like, do you have chicken tenders? So our number is 877-876-7445. We'll be right back here with more. Our final segment with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills on The Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
This is Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. I was familiar with Kirk Douglas. He'd eaten dinner here once, so I feel that I was. It was tasteful for me to mention kirking. But
here at Ted's, we want to put our meat in your mouth.
Well, you understand what I'm saying, right?
Well, I don't know, Ted. I mean,
hey, don't worry, it's all right.
877. Okay, if it's all right, it's all right. I would not necessarily use that comparison. 877-876-7445. Children and restaurants, and they have been forever more linked, sometimes in very, very happy ways, and other times irritating. Children can run and play and jump and whistle and howl and make noise, and it disturbs diners. Ted Bell is with us, the owner of Ted's of Beverly Hills, who said the incidents that we've been reading about and reporting of children being inadvertently or mistakenly served alcohol, it may not be a mistake at all. It is a subconscious or subliminal reaction on the part of the food server to try and calm or quiet down the child. 877-876-7445. Here is Megan on the Phil Hendry Show this evening with Ted Bell. Megan, go ahead, please.
I'm a mom of two. My youngest is actually extremely ADHD. But there is no way that I would ever condone giving alcohol to a child because, one, that can cause serious problems. And the only place this man should be serving food is in prison. That is just ridiculous. There's no excuse for it. There's other ways you can calm down a child than giving them alcohol.
Like what?
Bring coloring sheets with you. I mean, if it's that big of a deal, bring stuff with you from home.
What if they haven't done that? You're talking about the parents. I'm the restaurant owner. What do you want me to do?
Well, why don't you have those things available?
Well, I mean, parents should do
that.
I understand. Parents should do that. But if it comes down to either giving a child alcohol or giving him a coloring sheet, I mean, come on.
There is no choice. The parents have not given this child anything other than the encouragement to act that way because they just pumped sugar into him, pumped an ice cream sundae into him, pumped, you know what I'm saying.
So you ask them nicely to try to calm their child down, or you say, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. I mean, there are other ways to do it.
Well, what I did was I went to the, as I think you heard me say, Megan, I went over to our bar. I took a jug of Red Mountain that we had, a table wine. I poured it into the kid's sip cup. I walked back, and I was very calm. But at the very last minute, this is the occupational hazard. I couldn't stand it any longer, and I jammed it into the kid's mouth. And
jammed? What does that mean? Jammed it in?
I took the back of the kid's head, and I said, "Would you shut up?" So.
And if I were the parent right there, I would have stood up and I would have taken the sippy cup and shoved it down your throat.
Oh, so you get to have the kid that screams and yells and causes problems. The minute I try to do something about it, you kick my ass.
Not doing something about
thank
it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that. No, I appreciate it very much. Thank you. You know, I'm trying to operate a business, and you've let your child run
mad. Yeah, and you're doing it in a very criminal manner. I mean, what if that child has an allergic reaction or something? You want to live with that on your conscience?
What if I get a stroke from your child's behavior? Oh, you didn't think of that, did you? What if I get a stroke? What if I Kirk?
Well, get out of the business. Find another job. I mean, seriously, you can't handle it.
Fair. You can't tell. Then why don't you eat at another restaurant? Better yet, why don't you eat at home? You see, I've got an answer for everyone.
No, she is the customer. She's chosen your restaurant. What Megan is saying, Ted, she's the customer. You are the restaurant owner. You are the person that should be grateful that she is there, partaking of your fare, and giving you business. So this is not
whatever
some stare down between you and her.
Right.
Well, at our restaurant, the customer is not always right. And that's what gives us that cut above service.
Work at a bar or someplace that it's just adults. Because obviously you should not be around children. And if you have children yourself, I recommend that somebody take them away from you.
I have a son who is 16. So
well, I am sorry for your child.
You're more than welcome. Really? You're sorry for my son? He goes to Beverly Hills High School.
Okay.
Now you don't have anything to say, do you? There, see? I told you.
I'm very proud of your son, but seriously, you're wrong. You are extremely wrong. Like, if you were to ever serve my child alcohol, honey, it would be a bad day for you. A very bad day for you.
Well, it's already a bad day for me.
That is not your prerogative. It is not your choice to make. It is against the law, and it is very wrong.
Your child came into my restaurant. That made it a bad day from that point forward. The fact that I gave him alcohol.
Yeah, that's because you choose to let it get to you. You choose to let it get to you.
Ma'am, even if you were to take your high heel off at that point and drive the heel into one of my eyes, the day would be improving over listening to your kid.
Oh, that's an asinine comment to make. And you know full well what the lady is saying. Thank you very much for your call, Megan. 877-876-7445. We're out of time, Ted.
Oh, of course you're out of time. No, I know you're out of time. You're always out of time when I'm about to come with a home run. When I'm about to swing for the fences and the bags are full and I'm going to park it near the Union 76 ball. Oh, well, gee, we're out of time.
Well, we are out of time.
No, I know that. I know. I know you're out of time, and you always will be out of time every time I have the chance to say something good. Forget it, right?
We don't even have time for the jingle.
Oh, you bet.
Phil Hendry.